And it's March 3rd, 2015, and this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from our home at Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked. I'm Errol Strider.
And I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we invited you here tonight for some conversation, a few laughs, our spiritual perspectives, and as many surprises as possible.
Tonight's program is brought to you by Go Raw, 100% raw food that is terrific. It's so healthy and tastes good, and if you get the munchies, this is what you need to eat. And it can be found at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's. God bless you. I hope you got a Trader Joe's near where you are. If not, I'll be praying for you. The organic section of Costco's, or just go to their website, find out about Go Raw and where it can be found in your neighborhood.
And if you are so inclined to talk to us tonight, our call-in number is 888-627-6008. I could have been a telephone operator.
You know, I feel like we've been doing really good with our radio voices tonight. You know, it's like, I felt like, okay, I'm going to have like a radio kind of voice. But I was feeling those feelings authentically, kind of excited. My Lord, we just became grandparents last week, less than a week ago.
We did. And we, that little girl that we've been talking about for so long, finally arrived. And her name is Ella Rose Tsai Strider. And she showed up on March 26, 2015, making her a daughter of Pisces, who will wear amethyst. I tell you something. I held this child for a few hours, and I just stared at her face, and I felt like I was in a hypnotic trance, and I was in a meditation. Just I had no thoughts in my mind, and I had no thoughts about her face, just the fact that it existed. I was so awestruck by this new being, this brand new being that had no, I mean, she was so, her purity shone through. There was nothing on her that could say, yeah, this happened to me, that happened to me, you know, except for not getting something done right away, which she lets you know pretty quickly. But I just thought it was amazing. And I became so aware, Errol, that grandparenting is so different from parenting. You know, it's like watching our drama and comedy played by a different cast.
That's good. I like that. But I have to say, it was the ears. It was looking at her ears that, you know, if I was not a believer in a creative, brilliant, genius mind back in our play, just the structure of those little ears and the fact that they came out 9 months later, zip, there they were on all their ear mechanism that's just like perfectly designed to catch sounds. And by the way, as a metaphor, as an aside, I think the way hearing works is a great metaphor for how we deepen into reality, because it starts with a mechanical impulse. The air hits my eardrum, and then it becomes a chemical information. There's a chemical reaction that takes place, and then it sends it down to electrical impulses to the brain. So it goes through one, two, three media, entirely different media, and you could almost think of spirit as like keep going down. That's the next media, except it's not discernible in the way material media are, but it's very much the medium in which we live, move, and have our being. And that's part of what we're here to celebrate each Tuesday night, in case you're not having that awareness. We need to be reminded. Rochelle and I are pretty good about reminding each other when she's not hocking me.
I don't hock you. I just remind you of things you forget.
Of course, I knew that. For those of you who don't know what hocking is, it's kind of like a Yiddish term, isn't it?
Which means nag in English.
Yeah, it's nag. It's kind of like bagel, but that's been co-opted into English.
Yes, I guess so. The other thing about this little baby, this brand new baby, and every brand new baby, and we'd be all brand new babies at one point, is that we're like this empty slate just waiting to be written on. It's like every moment there's a, something's being written on that slate that becomes her and what she'll be feeling and thinking for the rest of her life. It's an amazing thing. I mean, I was so busy being a mom when I had my children that I don't think I, no, I was aware of the awesomeness and the glory of it, but and have, I was too busy feeding them, taking care of them, and dealing with them to be in this state, which is a little bit more removed. You know, she was crying. They were, remember when they were sponge bathing her or something?
Right.
And she was crying, and they were doing a whole bunch of things to make it better. And I was fascinated by the fact that she was crying. Her little lips were quivering, and her little gums were showing, and her mouth was, and her face was so red. And I just found it fascinating. And I,
her feet were going like nuts. So that was the thing. I thought, you know, this is exercise. Maybe this is part of it too. I think it freaks out parents that their child is crying. When, you take care of them, of course, and. My son Ian taught me the four S's, the five S's of things you do.
You swaddle.
You swaddle, then you, what was the second one? Then you...
I think you put her on the side.
Side, right? Side, and then you...
Then you shush her in her ear.
Oh, you shush, yeah.
Yeah, okay, but I forgot what the other two are.
And then you sway.
Sway, right.
And then the last is swing. You put them in a swing.
Or you swing.
Or you swing. Or was it East Coast Swing?
I don't know. I don't know.
Remember.
But the most interesting thing for me was the fact that they're aliens. They're like aliens. You know, we're given this job of taking care of our children, our babies, but they don't speak our language. We don't speak theirs. We don't know what they're crying about. We have to figure it out, constantly figure out what's bothering them when they get disturbed. It's like you want them to tell you, you know, it hurts here, I need to be changed, give me some food. But they don't. They're like, it's like dealing with alien beings, you know, that you have to take care of and learn their language. And I'm finding the whole thing so fascinating, I can't begin to.
Welcome to another episode of Babies as Aliens. Last time we left our babies, they were beginning to teeth.
As soon as they start talking, they learn our language. They learn our language. You know, like babies in India learn Indian, and babies in Bangkok learn Bangkokan.
Yeah. And you heard it here, folks, Bangkokani, which is the language spoken in Bangkok, according to Rochelle Strider.
In a moment of insanity. So well, please forgive me, all those who were born in Bangkok.
There are those moments. At the risk of being a little on the serious side with some music, but our granddaughter's name is Ella. It's Ella Rose. I will always refer to her as Ella Rose. I love that combo. So there's some Ella in our program tonight, and there's some Rose in our program tonight. And speaking of the serious song, this song, I want to kick it off with this. It's called Ella's Song, and it's Sweet Honey in the Rock. Ella's Song. Can you believe it? Very different.
We believe in freedom, cannot rest. You believe in freedom, cannot rest until it comes. We believe in freedom, cannot rest. Hear me talking to you. We who believe in freedom, cannot rest until it comes. Until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mothers' sons. We who believe in freedom,
sing it with me if you like it.
We who believe in freedom,
we believe in freedom,
the older I get, the better I know that the secret of my going on is when the reins are in the hands of the young who dare to run against the storm. 'Cause to me, young people come first. They have the courage where we fail. And if I can put a shade of sunlight, I say, carry us through the gales. We who believe in freedom cannot live. Hear me talking to you. We who believe in freedom cannot raise them. In struggling myself, don't need a whole lot. I've come to realize that teaching others to stand up and fight is the only way my struggle survives. I'm a woman who speaks in a voice, and I must be heard. At times I can be quite difficult. Not needing to clutch for power, not needing the light just to shine on me. I need to be one in the number as we stand against tyranny. We here believe in freedom and not live.
We believe in freedom and unrest until it's come. Okay, so that's Ella's song.
How is it Ella's song? I never even heard the word Ella in it.
I think one of the, I bet it was one of those gals wrote that song. They just, it was Ella.
Uh-huh.
That's my guess. Uh-huh. Ella's song. And
they have such a wonderful harmony, Sweetani and Rock.
Amazing. But I think it's important also to context. This little person is coming into this planet this at this time in history. And, you know, while we have a momentary time to gaga about the new baby that it is, and not without its difficulty, as many of you will appreciate, until, you know, the body is adjusted to the mom and the nursing and the baby and the breathing and and not just it's pooping, his parents are pooping too all this time too, you know. People forget that.
Except nobody has to clean them up.
Right. Right. There is that. But nevertheless, we take it for granted. I was just flashing as they were singing that song of like someone in the middle of war-torn Europe where battles are happening right nearby.
And during our revolution when battles were happening. Anywhere there's war.
Anywhere. But for some reason that scene came to mind. And someone was giving birth and there was a baby and there was probably many, many, many babies were born in the middle of battles. Mm-hmm. One time or another, and to think what a different experience that is for the parents, and truly to be grateful that we are free and we're not under oppression, many, most of us in this country, but as they're pointing out in that song, there are still people under oppression for whatever reason, and freedom continues to have to be sought and fought for.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, Ella, welcome to a unique historical time and opportunity.
And she was born in the 21st century.
Right, right. Think of the things, I was going to go into some memories tonight, but think of the things that she'll never know about other than in history books, like phonograph records and rotary telephone dials.
And typewriters.
And
cash registers in stores.
Right. And guys coming out and changing your oil, unless you live in Oregon.
They still do that.
They still
Oregon?
Do that. Yeah, they have the guys, just like in the Texaco. Remember the Texaco show with Milton Berle? And those guys would come out. That dates us, doesn't it? Milton Berle. That was like in the turn of the 19th century.
When we grew up, we did not have credit cards. We didn't have credit cards when I was her age, just born.
Right, right.
We didn't have television. Didn't have television. I didn't have... I'm trying to think of all the millions of things. Well, we certainly didn't have the internet.
But things we've had and we've gone through, like in our lifetime, we'll have gone through cassette tapes.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning, we will have gone through, we've already gone through those little mini discs they used to stick in floppies. That they still have a picture in the icons in your computer when you look at the top, like in Word. It still looks like one of those little floppies, those 3.5 inches.
And they don't exist anymore.
And I threw out several boxes of them just recently.
Did they have anything on them? What do you do with the things that were on them?
Well, I hope I took it off them years ago because that was a long time ago. My point being is that the other thing that we're doing is we're building...
Much more disposable.
They were, yeah. But we're building up a memory base as we go. We're accruing memories and... Here's the question I want to pose to your audience while you listen to this and to those of you who are here with us, and that is, what determines the value of memories here and in the future? Let's think about it.
Got me going down in strike. All the souvenirs in my memory got me ruining my soul. Ba-ba-dee-dee-dum, ba-ba-dee-dee-dum, dee-da-dee-da-dee-dum, dee-wo. Ba-ba-dee-dee-dum, ba-ba-dee-dee-dum, ba-ba-dee-dee-dee-dee. All those souvenirs in my memory got me going down in strike. All those souvenirs in my memory got me ruining my soul. But if you tell me what I should be offering,
if you can understand what she said. What she was saying is, all those souvenirs in my memories got me going down in strike, all those souvenirs in my memories. She says, got me ruining my soul. Well, so that would be a, like, not a value, unless being ruining your soul is a value. So it kind of goes back to, what is the value that we give our memory? Well, what makes a memory valuable? A really, like a souvenir, something you want to take from this present moment and have it in the next present moment. That's a souvenir. That's something you value. So what puts value?
Yeah, a souvenir is something you take with you from a place you've been.
Right.
And in your memory, you can do that. I don't know. Like, you know, I think that it was very interesting to see what our children were dealing with in the first few days of having a child, that I forgot a lot of it. It was out of my memory. Now, but watching them go through it, it started to come back from my memory. It was like the door to my memory opened up because I saw them doing it and I remembered having done that. But prior to that, that door was closed in to my memory of it, of that particular moment. And I think it's because one thing children do is they really anchor us to the now, you know, because they change so much. You know, like a week after a child is born, they are nothing like they were when they were just born.
Well, they have a few things in common.
Well, but you see them that way, and they're so they demand so much of you. They bring you into the now. So the things that happened a while back in your relationship with your child sort of is stored. It gets in the storage part of your memory, and something can bring it up and bring it back, but you're right here with them, so you're not bringing up those memories. They're not necessary, because the reality of your life with those children are so right here. And I think that we bring up memories maybe to validate that we were here before, because the thing about being present is when it, you're not in a state of memory, you're not in a state of remembrance, you're right engaged with what's happening in front of you at the moment that you're in.
But to what degree are you affected by, I won't say your memories, but it's really your past experiences, isn't it?
Well,
whether
that's
we remember them or not.
Right, that's the sum and substance of who you are in the moment you're in. It's already part of you.
So as we're moving through life, we're kind of being chiseled and simultaneously being chiseled and chiseling out substance and attaching it to ourselves. And some of it is it has a memory. It's like a kite with a tail, like the memory is the tail and the kite is the substantive event that affected us and added somehow to our beingness because of what happened at that time, and what we, more importantly, or at least as importantly, what decision we make and how we dealt with our set of circumstances.
Well, for instance, you probably, and I know I don't, remember being bathed for the first time. But I have memories.
No, but I can think of other things.
But
that
I have
did
memories
naked
of,
for the first time. Does that count? Rochelle's rolling her eyes.
But I have memories of bathing when I was like 4 years old in the bathtub and going underwater and blowing bubbles. And I remember that very clearly. And it was a very free, wonderful, marvelous feeling. And the feeling part of that is definitely with me. Because I was like alone in the bathtub, you know, and I was able to go underwater and come up and blow bubbles. And
wow.
It's really special.
That was pretty neat. I did not have anything like that experience. I did have an experience when I was a child of someone not trying to drown me, but they did hold my head underwater a really long time.
Oh, dear.
And I was like a young prepubescent, maybe 11, 12, 13 years old, and I was spent the day with my sister and her friends were like first year college, high school, end of high school age group. She was 9 years older than I, and we went into this lake. This was in Missouri, and this guy was messing with me, and I was coming out, getting on the raft, and he held my head under.
Oh, my goodness.
And I remember being scared and angry, and I popped my head up out of that water, and I yelled at him. And this is where the story takes an interesting twist. I yelled at him, "God damn you!" I was so angry, so angry. Now, my sister didn't know about what had come before. She just saw me. She was on the shore already, and she heard me say that, and she got angry at me and disciplined me and get out of that pool right now for saying that.
And I thought you were in a lake.
A lake. I meant a lake. But mm-hmm. To some extent, it was an injustice compared to what was going on. Yeah, but she was only party to one part of the story. Kind of makes you realize there's so much more to the story than anything we observe or report or gossip about.
That's probably why we shouldn't be judging anything, because we don't have all the facts. We don't have all the whole picture of anything. And to reserve, quote unquote, our opinions, our judgments of it, because we really, in truth, are constantly walking around in a state of ignorance. Just not necessarily bliss, but definitely ignorance.
It just so happens we have a guest tonight, and I'm very excited to welcome him, and that's Rabbi Moshe Greenberg. Hello, Rabbi Greenberg.
Hello, Harold. It's good to be here. Yeah, talking about this here thing of a judgment, I'll tell you a little story about judgment. It goes back in the Bible. And first reading that they were in the woods, and it was nice, and God said, "But there's something you're not supposed to do. And if you don't do that, you'll be fine. You can stay here. Have a good time. And be naked. It'll be like living later generations will live at Lupin Lodge, where you can be naked too, like Adam and Eve. It's not so different. Anyway, so what happened was is that he says, the one thing you cannot do is judge. Nope. This is good. That's bad. This is not so hot. This could use a little more pepper. That's different than judging. See, you could use a little more pepper, saying how you prefer it. But the judgment is slamming some perspective that is engraved in holy absoluteness about the relative value of something, and saying, that's the way it is. That's a judgment. And that's the thing God said. Not only you won't do it, you can't do it. It's an illusion to think you can't even judge and have it have any effect. And this is why we actually live in an illusion. For people who are curious to know, how could it be so real and still be an illusion? It's all to the degree that you've got your judgment laid on top of your experience. That's all. An illusion. Thank you very much, because I guess it. Bless you. I'll talk to you next time.
Well, that's very profound. Thank you, Rabbi. But you are a teacher indeed. You are a rabbi. So, I think, too, that judgment, if I may, creates a separation. You know, like, I don't see someone on an totally equal level with me that I'm judging. They're either above me or below me. But they're not equal to me. And to wrap my heart around a human being that may be causing me difficulty is very difficult, because I really want to push that person down below me. And to wrap my heart around someone who I give all this exaggerated affirmation to is the same thing, like, oh, she's so gorgeous, I mean, or she's so brilliant, or she's so accomplished, or she's so this, something that I'm not. There's a comparison thing there.
Ah, so the comparison factor is in the equation.
Yes, comparison factor is in the equation. I remember somebody saying this, comparison is of the ego.
Right out of A Course in Miracles. For those of you who have not heard of or read A Course in Miracles, let me tell you this. It's your no-nonsense spiritual primer. It's one thing to have all those great beliefs. I've had them. But when I slammed into A Course in Miracles, I swear after the first 50 lessons, I took that book and threw it up against the wall. I was so pissed off.
I threw it on the first lesson. I threw it down on the first lesson, which said, you don't know anything, right? Something like to that effect.
Yeah, it was so dissing anything you think you know or all the meanings you have for it. It's utterly, it's like pulling the rug out from your ego, like right like that. And boy, did my ego resist that. But a very interesting thing happened, and this is a memory that serves me. The fellow who gave it to me, my wonderful friend Omoran, with whom I've written many songs, he's the one that had given it to me. At that time, he lived out here in Northern California. We lived in Boulder, Colorado. And then I had thrown it against the wall after 50 lessons. But we came out to visit him and his wife and children. And I remember praying. I said, if I need to get into this work, because I could feel my resistance to it, I was praying to the source of all wisdom, knowledge, truth, and love, just let me know, guide me. And then we went back to Boulder, and I opened that book, and it was like, shoo, I was in it. It was like speaking to me. I was embracing it. And for the next several years, that became my primary spiritual primer.
That became your bus.
Yeah. Well,
to take you someplace.
Yeah, and it took me a long way, and we continue to have these teachings, I guess, until such time as I can totally just get it from within. And that leads me to this poem. And if I may share this poem with you, okay? This is a poem called Within Me, okay? And I wrote it many years ago. I'm going through my poems, but I think this is one that I looked at and I thought it might be a nice journey. Within me, cushioned up against my misery, I sense the furtive, fleeting tongue of the divine licking at me like some princely frog hoping to catch and shape me with its lovely saliva. Within me, nudging up against my string of no's, stretching back to my first scream, I feel God tickling my defenses, hoping to break me apart through laughter. That she might have room to wiggle between my cells and caress each ion me with the juice of divinity.
Mm-hmm.
Within me, knocking forever against the door of my icy vengeance, is my unswerving, inexorable lover, waiting for me to disengage, holding his lips in readiness for my retarded kiss.
Whoa.
Within me, embroiled in the chaos of my denials of myself, the multitude of smells I use to create the stench of my disbelief, lies the undaunted one, though she must live in the bleak sewers of my mind with my past vomit running down the walls, soaking her with the leeches of my doubts.
Yuck.
Sucking hope from me.
Oh, my God, that's scary.
Terrible image, isn't it? Yeah.
That's what's within you?
Well, you know, what can I tell you? I wrote this like 30 years ago. It's like reading somebody else's writing. What is going on with this guy? Running down the walls. So, never mind. I'm not going to repeat it.
Thank you.
I think it gets better. Wait a minute. Let's see what this next line. Oh, still, she waits and reaches forever up to me with an ivory flesh hand open to all my aching. Violet passions and unattached begs me to let her bathe me, nurture me, and transform all my rancid paranoia into sublime, pure soul nudity, that I might stand naked before myself and not be revolted or turn aside, but release myself to the whiteness of my insides. The within of me would turn me inside out, exposing the whole beauty-drenched universe in me. A trillion brush strokes, never repeating the same color.
Some say love, it is a river that drowns the tender reed. Some say love, it is a razor that leaves your soul. Some say love, it is a hunger, an endless aching need. I say love, it is a flower, and you, it's all.
And that's for you, our little darling granddaughter, Ella Rose Strider.
Who sang that one?
Bette Midler, of course.
Thank you.
Wow. It's such a poignant song.
It's beautiful.
I haven't listened to those lyrics in a long time.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely about hope. I mean, you know, that sense that, you know, it's really interesting to realize that sometimes when you're in the middle of something that seems like it's going to go on forever and take over your whole being, and it's dark and it's scary and you're anxious and all those things, it feels like it's never going to go away. And the realization that already this sense of beauty is taking shape in you, that all this darkness and the way you deal with it, because you're still moving, you're not giving up, is enhancing your soul. And your soul is like that rose. It just, beneath the snow, beneath the ground, it's growing. I just find that image very heartening. Heartening.
Heartening.
Yes, heartening.
I love that. It is heartening. So I love that expression, take heart. That would be an interesting thing for people to say to each other. Imagine a scene in a grocery store, and in the grocery stores, they still say, how are you, how you doing? In the banks now, they now say, how's your day going so far? Which
you,
I
you do?
Yeah, yeah. How's your day going?
Uh-huh.
And I'm very aware that they've kind of changed their way of being cordial and...
They're more personal.
More personal. How's your day going? And how are you? And if everybody, instead of saying that and kind of going, okay, how you doing? Which is so funny. It's like we just pass over it like so. Yeah, okay, how you doing? Almost everyone I meet asks that question, how are you? Rarely do I hear someone just say hello. Some people, as a matter of fact, will skip the hello entirely. I say, hello, how are you? They just skip, they go right to the how are you. But it's so funny because it's one of the most things we do with least amount of sincerity of almost anything we do.
We don't spend a lot of time waiting to find out.
No, no, we should imagine at the counters in all the supermarkets, somebody asks either the cashier or the customer, how are you? And she stops and they all stop and the entire store is stopped as they're thinking. And then you have these little animated cartoon things that pop out of their heads that you get to see what's going on in their minds and all the factors that are influencing their answer.
I sometimes say, once I remember saying, you don't want to know.
Right. That's a great response. You don't want to know. I love that.
Or like somebody will say, how are you doing? And he says, oh, I'm great. And I'll say, well, so am I. Well, at least two of us are doing well.
Right, right.
Well, today I was in the bank, and the bank teller was really tall and big, tall man.
Uh-huh.
So much so that it was like overwhelmingly, he was so big. And I said to him, how tall are you? And he said, and he looked at me because it felt like, I guess it felt like a personal question. I don't know. He said, 6'9". And I looked at him and I said, and I'm 4'10".
You did?
I did.
Did he laugh?
Yes, he laughed.
He did?
He did laugh. It was like we gave our names.
Instead of saying, yeah. Like, you know, you go out, what's your name?
Right.
And we ask them, how old are you? Like, that's what we do with little babies. Right. Everybody says, what's your name? How old are you? What if they said something like, what's your name? How tall are you?
Well, I saw this little girl today who's here at Lupin with her mom and dad.
I saw her too.
And she's 5. And I asked her what her name was. She told me. And then I said, how old are you? And she put up her fingers just like kids do, you know, 5 fingers. And she said, 5. And I loved it.
That's so funny.
It's that we do that. I mean, we don't do it as adults because we don't have enough fingers.
We ran out of options.
I mean, you can do it only till you're 10 and then it's all over.
Well, tonight we're celebrating new life. We're also helping to try and context it in what it means to be alive at this time on this planet. We're also taking a look at memories and how that affects this now. I mean, it's such a complex system, all of existence, that you really have to have a systems approach to it to be effective in it, I think.
Really?
Well,
in what way?
I'm thinking of, like, there's a book, Great Systems Guy, Fifth Sense, I think it was called. I forgot his name. For those of you who are into systems theory about organizations, the system is all these different systems that are like, they each have their own dynamic. Like, for example, there's your breathing system in your body, and that has its own, but it's connected to the intake of food system and the processing of the food. But they're kind of independent systems, but they work in complete cooperation. And once I think we can begin to look at our culture from a systems point of view, that they're just different, like weather systems. There's different movements of atmospheres changing and weather patterns and all that. Those are different systems. And that's what's going on now all the time. But we're so immersed in our own aspect of the system, our own biases, our own needs and compulsivities, that we tend to fail to appreciate that there's this system transpiring. And whatever else spirituality is, it's a call to a more whole perspective on your life experience that embraces more and where you allow yourself to be embraced by the more, if not, in fact, by the all of it.
Well, when you first started bringing up the systems, you said, you were talking about, well, there's the breathing system, and then there's this system and that system, but they all are part of another system, which is part of another system, which is part of another system, and it doesn't end, because it all these systems, which seem almost irrelevant in terms of the whole, because then they become a tiny speck in terms of the whole, and yet they. Without them, the whole doesn't exist.
And yet, just like the chromosome, it exists in every cell, the same chromosome that's essentially responsible for everything that's going on, except the intelligence that is the chromosomal thingy that's in a cellular form, but it's actually an intelligence working through biology, nature, that's saying, okay, you parts, cells go over there, I want you to be a liver, and you guys go over there, and you're going to be like a spleen, and you guys there, you're going to be the Beck neurological thing behind your eyeball, and you over there, you're going to be the toenail. Yeah. How'd you like to be the toenail, part of the toenail making device system down there? And all these little...
And now we see the little, all those systems come together in this little person,
right.
You know, all just like, you know, like functioning in this amazing way. And also the awareness that she's the composite of her ancestors, like her mama, dad, us. You know, I look at her and one second I see my daughter-in-law's mother. One second I look at her, I see her sister. I see our son, the shape of his face. I haven't seen Errol yet, but that's okay. That'll come.
We're still looking for Errol, including Errol. For those who know me and see me wandering around my little tent.
Still looking for Errol.
Looking for something. It's me that I'm looking for.
That's a good title for a book. Still looking for Errol.
Still looking for... Well, that's interesting you say that. I just came on this poem. I wasn't going to do another one, but I can't resist this because this was
called... Because his poems.
Right. But they were mine. They were not mine. They're from that guy in his 20s and
30s. Never mind, Errol.
Wrote this. Anyway, it's called Who Am I? Who am I? Do I know? Or flounder about in the liquid stream of unintentional bias? I have no idea what that means, but let's stay with it. Am I place or curdled dreams from childhood?
Interesting.
I think that's a fair question. Am I a mobile in the swim of rough ideas? Or do I float on crescents and assurances laughter? Will I be forthcoming or float about on wayward waves, tarnished by stale surf and wasted impressions, nurtured by indolence and unsurety?
God, you were in a dark space when
you
went those.
Well, you know, I was often in a dark space, but hey, you know, someone's got to do it. Okay, but I think it gets better. I usually end these things on a positive note, you know, because deluded that I am. Okay, who am this carcass buoyed up by this film of questions spilled from capsized canoes containing blistered ideals and sloppy directions? I mean, you have to have a really strange mind. I'm hoping that people, when they hear that this is like the deepest part, most real part of me, will begin to appreciate what they're dealing with here. You know, who I am, this carcass buoyed up by the thin film of questions spilled from capsized canoes containing blistered ideals and sloppy directions. And it ends. paddle home to myself then, stroke into maturity's harbor, and dock this waylaid soul in the port of serenity.
That movie.
You know, it's interesting what it reminds me of, the lyrics, the laughter. She talks about the laughter. And I was down in Southern California. We were doing a gig, and I remember my best friend from high school lived down there. So I tried to reach him. I couldn't. And when I got back here, I think I called him. And one of the first things out of his mouth when I was, because I hadn't talked to him in years and years and years, and this was like 50 years ago plus. And the first thing he said was, yeah, we had some good laughs, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was so peculiar, that that was what he remembered and he valued. And she talks about that, the laughter there. I think that's
well, she talks about, you know, the memory is too painful to remember, but the laughter that they remember, there were things that were too painful to remember. But the things that remained was the good times. And, you know, the other people would remember all the bad stuff because it sort of like serves them in some strange way to remember the bad stuff. It's like
Well, I believe that one of the main uses or the value of memories is that it is the soil from which wisdom can emerge if it's properly watered.
Well, that's a pretty line.
Well, there you have it. You heard it here tonight on Inside Out, the Laughing Heart. We never heard it before. It was great. Thank you.
The Naked Truth, actually, is the name of our program. Yeah. But you probably don't remember the name of our program.
Good memories. Well, we change. You know, things change. I want to give you all a little hint of something we're going to do on one of our next shows, maybe the next show. But speaking of children and babies, I've got a poem. I'm not going to do it tonight, but you're going to want to tune into this. It's called When the Infinite Was a Little Boy. And the second line is, he wore knee socks soaked in stardust and a tunic made of space.
That's fun.
So,
well, I'm sitting in the state of new life. New life doesn't have many memories, you know. The new life that's outside of me, I begin filling my memories. My memories are, getting larger as a result of this new life. And this new life that has come into our life is starting to gather those memories, but they have no words attached to them yet since she doesn't know any words.
Well, I'm imagining, as I was listening to this music, I was reminded, we played the song Whenever I Feel Afraid, Whistle a Happy Tune, and I had this fantasy that I would teach that to my grandchild, Ella Rose, and we would do it. Then I just thought, I saw another song that I'd like to teach her, which we'll play in one of our shows, Rosie from Bye Bye Birdie, and to teach her to dance with me, doing it together. I was my little Rosie. Dun, 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 dun. That's sort of how it goes.
Her name is Ella, though, but you can't keep calling her Rosie.
For me, the rose still is so big. Okay, thank you for reminding me. That's right. It's Ella.
Ella.
But I'll be the grandfather who relates to the rose part of her, and I'll make that very
clear. She has these beautiful round cheeks that definitely are rosy cheeks. Very, very rosy.
Yeah, well, you try hammering your way through a womb for like 12 hours, your cheeks would be rosy too.
wending your way through the womb.
Right.
She wended her way through the womb, and then she was born.
It's a good thing my cheeks are fatty. Okay, we got to go. This has been so much fun, and we want to thank our sponsor, Go Raw, and thank all of you for joining tonight. And we hope that this is a learning, and it's a step toward greater freedom. I think that's, in essence, what this show is all about. And so, Inside Out, Naked Truth, Tuesday nights. Be here.
Remember.
What?
Resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more. You heard it here. I'm Rochelle Strider. Good night.
And Carol Strider.